bills up for a public hearing and then a couple work sessions as well. Let's begin at the top of the agenda with a public hearing on House Bill 2162. I will open that and invite Dick up to give us the overview.
I have read it. I just
did. Yeah. Is it
written? Written through the page analysis.
Hey,
no.
It's written?
Not written.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Dick.
2162, right?
That's the one we're starting on.
Okay, it comes to the Revenue Committee from Agriculture and Forestry with a due pass recommendation, vote of 9-0. You have a staff measure summary there attached. Basically, what the bill does is to eliminate the sunset from provisions that reimburse the general fund from the Western Oregon Timber Tax account for Department of Forestry's expense incurred in administering the reforestation tax credit program, which we were looking at the other day in 2161, and the Western Oregon small tract option. Current sunset on these provision is July 1, 2001, and this bill removes that, so it would continue on. You also have a revenue impact statement there, and I just noticed before I came in that basically the estimate there is for 1 year, not 2 years, so we need to double that.
Okay.
The next thing you have attached is a table that I've prepared just to kind of go through what's happening as these new programs phase in. So basically, we've got fiscal years along the left-hand column there. The new program would include forest land in what we call large ownerships, over 5,000 acres, but would also include smaller ownerships that have opted to be taxed under that program. And then the old program would be those smaller ownerships which have not at this point exercised an option, and they continue to be taxed under the 80-20 program.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a column of what the administrative expenses are that have been charged against these. These monies go into the Western Oregon Timber Tax account, and these are the administrative charges against that account. And then what you have in the last three columns are the distributions. Now, for the first 3 years there, 97, 98, 98, 99, and 99, 2000, those distributions are not just to the counties. They go back to all taxing districts and are distributed based on tax rates. Under the new program, the distribution changes both for large ownerships and also for ownerships that are continuing under the 80-20 program. So the distribution now, under the new program, 93% of the money goes into the state school fund and 7% into the community college support fund. Nothing to local government. Now, for programs that remain, or for land that remains under the old program, the 80-20 program, 65% goes to these two school funds and is split in the same way, 93% and 7%, and the remaining 35% then goes to counties and counties only, county general fund revenue. But it is an offset for the counties against their levy. So these are the estimates. These are revised somewhat from the work we did last session on House Bill 3375, and it may be an incorrect. I just talked a moment ago. I've made assumptions here that the data that's coming in reflects what we can expect to receive in the future in terms of the way it's divided between large and small. And a lot of what we're getting right now is estimated tax payments, and they can't really allocate anything they were just putting into the aid program. So it's going to be the end of this fiscal year before we can really separate that out and find out whether our estimates were on target before or not. But anyway, if you continue to forecast what our experience is through January in terms of the division between these two programs, these are the revenues that would be available. And the important point for our bill here is that you're dropping down in 2003, 2004 to maybe $3 million, maybe substantially less, that's going to go into this account, and you're talking about taking out $1.5 million in
administrative
expense.
That's part of the problem, right? Let's bring up Ray Craig and Wally Rutledge then to help us find our way through this thicket. Yeah, Dick, and as they're coming up, what I'm seeing here is a precipitous decline in revenues, but least after this biennium, starting with this biennium, pretty much a static amount of revenue or administrative costs exist, and that obviously...
Well, I guess I would presume that if the program goes away, the 80-20 program, we find some other option
for
small owners, then the department's administrative expense at least would go away, but the forestry would continue.
Okay. Mr. Craig, Mr. Rutledge, who wants to go first?
Chair Satterley, members of the committee, I'm Ray Craig, Assistant State Forester. With me is Wally Rutledge, the Program Director for the Forestry Assistance Program. And we have actually several bills up today as a portfolio of Board of Forestry introduced bills. And this first one, House Bill 2161, as Dick explained, has to do with the sunsetting of some funding for our tax credit and the Western Oregon Small Tract Optional Tax. So Wally can, at this point, explain to you about these two programs and sort of reiterate the point that Dick just made about a problem that we foresee with our bill.
Chair Satterley and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wallace Rutledge, and I'm the Director of Forestry Assistance with the Oregon Department of Forestry. As you've heard, House Bill 2162 makes sunset that date for appropriating funds for the department to administer two important tax programs. I'll talk just a little bit about the Western Oregon Small Tract Optional Tax Program, what we call, we've referred to as WOSTOT. WOSTOT was created by the legislature in 1961 to provide an alternate forest land property tax program for small woodland owners in Western Oregon. The program taxes the land based on its productivity, and the timber is not subject to the privilege tax at harvest time. There's approximately 3,300 family forest landowners in Western Oregon that are in this program. This is a level that's been pretty consistent for the past several years. The participants in this program are really committed to the program, and they tend to do a better job of management than a lot of the other small woodland owners. The WOSTOT program requires that those landowners meet certain minimum management standards, and the Department of Forestry not only certifies these lands to the counties, but also inspects them to make sure that they meet those minimum qualifications. And in the written testimony, there's some examples of things that we do. Now, for the first 30 years of existence, WOSTOT was actually funded out of the general fund. In 1991, due to pressures on general fund, the funding was actually shifted from general fund to the Western Oregon Timber Tax account, and it was tagged to sunset at the end of that biennial. The legislature has continued to extend the sunset 2 years at a time ever since 1991. This creates some problems because the sunset dates have really frustrated landlords and the Department of Forestry on a two-year basis of whether or not there's going to be money to actually administer the program and whether or not the program was going to continue. In 1997, the legislature approved some suggested changes and modified WOSTOT, which actually streamlined some administrative costs, and those changes are attached there in attachment number one. There is some concern now about the duplication of WOSTOT and the new forest land tax program created by the 99 legislature through House Bill 3575 that Dick talked a little bit about. That tax program was created for large forest landowners, and those have tended to change every 5, 6, 7 years. And because forestry is a long-term investment, these frequent tax changes or changes in the tax law make it very difficult for family forest landowners to know how to invest their funds. And they really appreciate the fact that this one's been in existence for 40 years. Now, right now, we're really uncertain as to how these new tax programs are that are being placed into existence are going to affect the family forest landowners. And for that reason, we have many family forest landowners that are really still interested in maintaining the WOSTOT program. The other part of the funding was to fund the reforestation tax credit, and we had some considerable discussions about that, and we will a little later on, so I won't go into that at all at this point in time. So in summary, Now, the Wolfstop program actually has been in existence for 40 years, the tax credit for 21 years. Both of these programs have provided family forest landowners with incentives and the assistance that they need to manage their forest lands that really benefit all Oregonians. House Bill 2162 provides the critical funding to allow the Department of Forestry to continue the administration of these programs. Now, as you've heard, the current funding for these programs comes from the Western Oregon Timber Tax account. This is the collection account for the privilege taxes paid by most of the forest landowners when they harvest under the current programs. The 1997 legislature, or 99, that should be legislature, changed this mechanism through House Bill 3575, and the forest landowners will no longer be paying privilege tax, the large ones, after 2003. So because of this reduction in the number of landowners that actually be paying into this account, the account will be greatly reduced. And because of this, we would recommend at this time that we would amend this bill to go with a two-year extension rather than to completely just eliminate the funding mechanism. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
So to recap that, then, you're requesting an amendment to convert this to a two-year sunset on this bill. Gives you time to work out the administrative aspects of this and see what develops in the other pieces of the forest tax?
Chair Chatterley, yes, that's correct. We would like to, during the interim, work with the Department of Revenue and the landowners affected to see if we can come up with some stable funding for whatever tax programs will be continued on into the future.
Chair Chatterley, our goal in putting this bill in originally, and we obviously didn't thoroughly understand the ramifications of it at the time, or it wasn't clear to us, is to find stable long-term funding for the program. And so this is not, you know, obviously this isn't the right vehicle to do that with. So we still need to have the funding in the next 2 years, as you said, but our real aim here is to get into some sort of a stable funding source for these two programs.
Any questions for these gentlemen, then? I'll ask Dick to work with you on getting a two-year sunset amendment drafted. Okay. All right. Let me invite Ray Wilkerson to come on forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I'm Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'd like to speak in support of this bill. These two programs are both good programs. We support both of them, even though the Western Oregon Small Tract Option Tax Program is not open to our members. It's only small owners are eligible for that particular program. But it has been on the books for quite a while. People who have enrolled their lands in that do a wonderful job of managing their forest land and feel they're strongly attached to the program. And it has worked well in the past, and it may be in the future with the major change in timber taxes overall that we started last session that Wolfstock will be converted into the larger program as well. But for the time being, if the folks who have worked with that program all these years want it to continue, that's certainly something we wouldn't object to. The other program we are eligible for, you've heard that 2161 a couple times, and that you have a work session scheduled on that again today. And just want to reiterate that we strongly support the underproductive forest land tax credit. And Representative Haas, maybe you weren't here. Chair graciously let me testify out of order the first time on that bill, but we did support the, if you can see fit to do so, the increase from 30% to 50%, if that's what still might be an option. So the issue with this bill, however, is the administration of these two programs, and has been made quite clear that has to change because the current source of funds is going away. So we'll be happy to work and help make that happen.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Christina McNitt and Jim Dennison.
Good afternoon, Chair Chatterley and members of the Revenue Committee. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt, a State Issues Coordinator for the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and with me at the table is Jim Dennison, one of our members from Toledo. The Oregon Small Woodlands Association has a longstanding policy to support eliminating the sunset provisions for continued funding of the WOSDOT, or Western Oregon Small Tract Option Program. WOSDOT is an optional property tax program for small woodland owners having a 10-acre minimum in Western Oregon with a stand age less than 40 years old at the time of entering into the program. Another key provision of House Bill 2162 before you this afternoon is the funding of the administrative side of the reforestation tax credit. Again, this is a program meant to provide an incentive to private landowners to convert their land into productive timber stands. Oswald has testified before about their support for this bill, and in addition to amendments moving the credit from 30% to 50%, would like to support House Bill 2162, which provides for the administrative funding of that program. We also recognize that with the changing tax structures for the small woodland owners, that the pool of money available to fund WOSDOT is not going to be continuing, and so it's unrealistic to ask for a repeal of the sunset, and we support the Dash 1 amendments. I thought they would be drafted by now, so I apologize. The Draft 1 amendments that extends the sunset for 2 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Shetterly and Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Dennison. I'm a professional consulting forester. I've worked on the Oregon coast for about 40 years. I have a tree farm that's been under the WOSDOT program for over 21 years. Very familiar with landowners that are under this program. Some of the people that started and initiated this program 40 years ago thought that getting away from privilege taxes or severance taxes or anything that had anything to do with harvesting, that let's consider tree farming as a farm crop, and we'll pay the taxes annually that we have to pay on farmland. Since then, there have been numerous changes in values of farmland and forest land, and I only want to say that I urge you to consider extending this program at least 2 years. I would prefer to see it not sunset and be a permanent program. I've promoted this program for 20 years as a consulting forester. A number of people that have applied and entered into the program, they do have management plans, which is required by the American Tree Farm System. They pay taxes annually like they would as a farmer, and they pay income taxes when they harvest timber. And I think that the program has been very beneficial for the management of forests. I started with a stump pasture. It had no trees on it. When I entered this program, I applied to put the land under the Western Oregon Small Tract Option after I had planted trees on about 23 acres. And I would hope that my children someday can harvest those trees and not have to worry about what the tax implications are. I had a professor in college that said that every dollar for taxes you pay, if you start multiplying that times the period that you're growing trees, for whether it's 40 years, 60 years, or 90 years, which is probably the combination of mean annual increment, it would astound you what that dollar is worth. And I can feel that right now. And I've only been working on this for about 40 years, but the investment I have in taxes on property are the thing that discourages you from being a forest landowner. I thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either Mr. Dennison or Ms. McNitt, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to, Jim said that he had been on the Oregon coast and then in forestry for 40 years. Well, I've only known him for about 30 years, but I can vouch for his expertise in with small woodlot owners and in the larger timber holders on the Oregon coast. And what he says is very true, and I respect what he's done for the small woodlot owners in Lincoln County very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for coming forward today. We'll get those amendments done up and have the bill back for us then when they're ready.
Thanks
very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill. I'm sorry, before I do that, is anybody else wishing to testify that didn't sign up? Okay, then we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2162 and invite Mr. Craig and Doug Decker forward for House Bill 2165 and open a public hearing on that. Dick?
Mr. Chair, first let me point out an error in the measure summary that you have, the first page of the materials there. It says that the bill comes to you from agriculture and forestry without recommendation. That's not correct. The bill was a two-pass bill out of ag and forestry with a 9 favorable votes. What the bill does is to create a sub-account, which is called the Forestry Enhancements Donation Sub-account, in the Forestry Department account. And it permits forestry to accept donations of money, labor, and materials for the purpose of contributing to the management and enhancement of state forests. It dedicates those donations into this sub-account and limits expenditures from the sub-account either to the purposes specified in the donation or, again, to the management enhancement of state forests. So you do have a fiscal impact statement with the bill. You do not have a revenue impact statement because there is no revenue impact.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Carlson, Ray Craig, Assistant State Forester with the Department of Forestry, and with me is Doug Decker, our Interpretive Director in North Oregon area. And this is the second of the three bills in the Board of Forestry's portfolio before you today. And Doug, I wonder if you'd explain a little more about this bill.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Decker. I'm the Interpretive Program Director for the Northwest Oregon Area Office of the Department based out of Forest Grove. I'm pleased to testify in support of 2165, which would enable us as an agency to accept gifts, grants, and donations for particular projects. Before addressing the specifics of the bill, I thought it would be helpful to provide a brief refresher on how state forest management activities are funded. And I guess I would sum that up by saying that there are no general fund dollars associated with the state forest management program. It is a self-funding, other fund operation based on the state's share of timber harvest receipts. Under historic agreements, the counties that contain those state forest lands retain 2/3 of the revenue from the harvest of those forests, and the Department of Forestry retains 1/3, and out of that funds all the management needs and expenses. By statute and administrative rule and by policy, state forests are managed sustainably to provide a wide variety of benefits, including social, economic, and environmental values. Some of those activities, particularly the ones that are increasingly valued by Oregonians, such as recreation, forest education and interpretation, cultural resource management, habitat improvement, they generate very modest or no revenues at all, and are currently dependent on the state's share of the timber revenue. The Department of Forestry is committed to providing these important resource values and currently budgets to fund these purposes. House Bill 2165 essentially is aimed at diversifying and sustaining funding that can really continue to contribute to these activities while insulating them to some degree from fluctuations in the timber market. At the same time, the bill enables the department to develop and to maintain partnerships with foundations and organizations, user groups, and other donors to accomplish projects that could otherwise go unfunded. As you know, state agencies have to have specific legislative authority in order to be able to accept gifts, grants, and donations, and that's what 2165 does. With the passage of 2165, the department would be able to accept those, specifically for all those ongoing resource values on state forest land. I guess I'd like to give you some examples of how we might use that. The partnerships that we see flowing out of this include things like seeking the donation of building materials and or foundation grants to help us construct trailheads, campgrounds, and other recreation facilities. We would be able to utilize bequests, for instance, to help fund the delivery of forest education or interpretation programs. We'd be able to accept an endowment to help maintain recreation facilities or seek grants to further cultural resource management, habitat improvement, and research and monitoring activities. 2165 provides the authority to do that and would allow the department pursue these types of partnerships. So in short, we think this bill makes sense because it enables the agency to diversify and augment somewhat uncertain funding at little or no cost to the state. It creates public-private partnerships that send a message of engagement and involvement with our constituents, and it shares ownership and responsibility for assuring the kinds of forest resources and experiences that are increasingly important to Oregonians. Thank you for your consideration. I welcome your comments. Questions?
Any questions? No questions. I think we like it. Thank you. Is there anybody else here to testify on House Bill 2165? Does this have a this account? Does it have a subsequent referral?
No.
Do we need a subsequent referral?
No money.
Well, we are creating a an account for continuous appropriation.
It does not require any general fund appropriation or other fund appropriation to be.
It doesn't require any, but we're creating this account to receive.
Private donations.
Private donations, okay.
As far as I know, there's no need for it to go to Ways and
Means.
Okay.
Look
a little.
Look a little. Be brave.
Be brave. Let's run it.
All right. with that, then, we'll close the public hearing unless there is anybody else who wants to testify on 2165 and open a work session.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I move House Bill 2165 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves House Bill 2165 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? All right. We like it so much, we don't even want to talk about it. Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Brown. Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2165 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there someone who wishes to carry? Representative Hass will do that. Lots of forest land in western Washington County. Yeah, I know. Not much in the eastern part. But,
none of it federal, Mr. Chair.
No. We know that. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2165. And thank you very much for bringing forward a good bill. Let's go to work session now on House Bill 2161. I will open that. Dick, could you bring us up to date with the amendment?
We actually have, the committee has two amendments.
Yeah.
You received the dash one amendment before. Just again reviewing what the bill does, it's extending the sunset here, which allows the Department of Forestry to continue to certify or pre-certify reforestation tax credits, credits being against corporate and individual income tax. The dash one amendments increase the current credit percentage is 30% of the certified cost, with the exception of cost share dollars or other incentive programs that reimburse essentially people for doing the reforestation. So you get the cost of the project less those costs, and then the credit is for 30% of that. This would increase that credit to 50%. And the dash two amendments then, following discussion last time, the committee thought a sunset of some sort should be on the bill, and so asked for a 10-year sunset. And so those are the amendments you have before you.
Mm-hmm.
You have a revenue impact for the bill if it is initially, and then I have it as a dash one impact, but it would be the same whether you adopt both the dash one and dash two amendments, because 10 years is so long that it has the same impact as if you did it forever.
But again, keeping in mind, this is the statute, this is the credit that has the statutory cap, and these are well within the cap that's already built into the statute that authorizes the credit.
Yes.
Okay. Seems to me we had propounded some questions to forestry about the dash
one amendments, why don't we invite whichever one or both of you that want to answer those questions? I see we've got a handout in the materials. Let's just get that into the record.
Mr. Chair, if I may,
it
should be. It wasn't in my packet. Is there in your packet?
We have it, yeah.
Sort of economics of forest.
Economics of reforestation tax credit.
Right.
I assume that came from our...
It comes from me.
Oh, it came from you.
Yeah, and I thought about a little bit where the discussion was headed last time, and I thought maybe I'd just try to frame the issue from the standpoint, at least, or the perspective of an economist. And so what, you know, sort of looking at it, what would happen if there was no government incentive programs whatsoever? Well, basically the market makes a decision as to where investment is going to go, whether it's going to go to the reforestation or into, you know, any of them, a host of other investment opportunities. And what the market is saying is that the rate of return in reforestation is low relative to other returns, so you're not going to get as much done. There may be some key packages that get done or key parcels of ground, but not much is getting done. We started to talk about how much the trees would be worth if you do reforest it and how many jobs you're going to create. And I'm thinking in terms of our OTIM model and in terms of sort of dynamic analysis, you know, those are not really relevant questions unless you're increasing the overall level of investment in Oregon. And what is likely here is that you're shifting investment from some other alternative into reforestation, in which case there may be a little differential impact on jobs in terms of investment in electronics as opposed to reforestation, where the jobs get created, how soon they get created. And then with respect to the value of the product, that's really part of the market's decision. That information is there when the market makes its decision, no. So those are not things that you really need to think about as reasons for some public policy action to modify that market decision. And what you come down to as an economist is then a discussion of what we call externalities. And that is, you have a person, a supplier and a demander, essentially, that are making a decision in the market. Are there benefits that accrue to people that are not associated with that decision-making process? So those are external to the decision. And that's what you're looking for to justify some sort of change or modification of the market decision. And I just sort of tried to think about the things that are important here in terms of reforestation, and it leads you into sort of these intangibles, air quality. One thing we do have, you do have a bill, not before this committee, but in the legislature this time, House Bill 2200, which tries to internalize the idea that by creating trees, you create something that offsets or that puts oxygen into the air and helps air quality. That bill is trying to internalize that by making it, by giving the owner a certificate. If he does grow the forest, he can sell that certificate, and so he does get a reward. He does get a benefit directly to the person making the decision. But generally, and as it exists right now, there is no such mechanism for the person making the decision to register the benefits of increased air quality. The same is true of water quality, whether it's salmon in terms of stream restoration, whether it's erosion, again, stream muddying and so on, salmon habitat, or whether it's simply clean water. And wildlife habitat are some of the things that I think are the justifications for some sort of public policy to modify the market decision. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Witt.
I appreciate that analysis that Dick's given us. I think another justification here is that the areas of our state, and specifically the natural resource sector in our state, which has been hurt very much over the last 10 years as federal timber has been withdrawn from the marketplace, what this bill says is that we want to have as productive as possible private forest land. And if that cuts a little down a little bit on investments that might be made in Washington County in electronics and it goes into rural Oregon, I think it's, you know, it's something I think that my constituents would be willing to recognize the need to do, because we need to make sure that our private forest land is well cared for, well managed, and as productive as possible.
And I was thinking the same along those same lines. While there may not be a from this basis to say that this will result in a net increase, for instance, in jobs. It may result in a net increase in forest-related jobs, which in parts of our state, every little bit helps. Okay? So it's a good green bill, good rural bill. Let's hurry and vote. Just don't talk us out of it. Go ahead and give us the information you've got.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, Ray Craig, you, the committee had a couple of questions of us last time, and so I believe you have a couple of handouts hopefully in front of you, and we wanted to just quickly go over what our idea of the question was and then you know, our response to it with information that we had on hand. Before we do that, though, I wonder if I might just take a minute and sort of back up just to the standpoint that the Board of Forestry has, for the last 25 years, a very comprehensive view of forest land in Oregon, and periodically produces a document called the Forestry Program for Oregon. And when the first Forestry Program for Oregon came out in the mid to late 70s, it was focused around timber supply. The most current Forestry Program for Oregon is centered on a much broader range of values. And the upcoming next edition will focus on sustainability, which is something that is internationally and nationally, and in Oregon a very important feature, which primarily is economic, social, and environmental components to it. So it's sort of a three-legged stool. The reason I'm bringing that up is because even way back in the 70s, this issue of non-industrial private forest lands was very important on the board's mind. At that time, as I mentioned, it was focused around timber supply, and the board saw a tremendous opportunity to increase timber supply on these lands. And in order to do that, they looked comprehensively at what they might do at that point. And they came up with something called the Woodland Management Act. This was in 1979, and it had a number of components to it. It had a cost share program, and it had this particular tax credit program, and had some other things. And as these forestry program for Oregon has evolved through time, and the emphasis now again is really on a range of benefits from forest land, the board continues to focus on non-industrial private forest lands as an important source of timber yet, but also from many other values. And one of the board's tenets is they'd like to have landowners willingly invest in their lands. So sort of the policy context for this particular piece here is that the board and the federal government actually have a number of programs to provide landowners incentives to willingly invest in these lands. Wally mentioned the other day the number of underproducing forest acres in Oregon, and those underproducing acres, they have such a tremendous potential for not only economic returns, but also some of the returns that Dick just talked about. And so this is a central piece. It's not the only piece. The department has a loan program where we loan money, a different program totally. There are federal cost share programs. This is a very important component of the larger policy that the board directs towards these lands. Now, just to talk about this real briefly, then one of the questions that came up the other day was, well, can you tell us a little bit about the benefits of reforesting underproducing forest land? And so this chart, it comes in two pieces. The top piece is what we call it the immediate economic benefits, and the bottom is the future economic benefits. And the immediate economic benefits, the idea there is that there's underproducing forest land, and it has some scattered timber on it that most likely would not be harvested because it's expensive and hard to get to and so forth, that we believe and experience has shown us would be harvested in what we call these conversion operations. And so the idea of this table is on the left-hand side, present investment, just, you know, in increments of $500,000, and the top one is $1 million, 1,600 acres of conversion. And then that next figure is the salvage harvest volume that would immediately come onto the market. We have an equation that has jobs relating to harvest levels in terms of processing as well as jobs and reforestation. And then a harvest income, that's income that goes to the landowner, and then landowners pay an income tax on that. There's a privilege tax and a harvest tax, and so total tax return to the state. The bottom one is future economic benefits, and the columns are the same, except in the third column, volume harvested. This would be of producing fully stocked forest lands, and so obviously the volumes are much higher and the values are much higher associated with those, and so consequently there's more jobs and higher harvest incomes. Now, we had this on hand at the time we made it. We were showing there in that bottom one this privilege tax. Now, we know from discussions earlier that most likely would not develop, but the income tax, harvest tax, and total tax revenue would. I think another real important point to just tag along with what Dick was saying earlier, there are many, many other benefits to reforesting underproducing forest lands, and those are listed there on the bottom right, but we believe that there's better wildlife habitat associated with, you know, forest lands in trees as opposed to maybe brushland. There's an improved fisheries habitat. There's lots of research that shows that, you know, riparian areas in general are considered more healthy with trees, particularly conifer trees. And an improved water quality from shading and stability of the banks alongside the stream and so forth. Actually, forest land retains water longer, and it also distributes the water longer. So, in other words, if you had a piece of land with brush, and then you put trees on it, and the trees grew up, there'd be an improved water distribution and retention. Aesthetics, everybody has their own idea about aesthetics, but certainly I would argue that a forest stand has better aesthetics than a brush stand. Carbon dioxide, we talked about. Rural unemployment, I'd really like to, just if I could, emphasize our emphasis on rural employment. And, you know, forest lands are in rural areas, and generally rural people are the ones that are working on the operations in reforestation and for the most part, in processing as well. And then there's the increased quality of wood for value-added manufacturing. And so there's a lot of other benefits associated with this. So this is our effort to answer the question of, you know, why do this? There's, in summary, there's a lot of economic benefits, but there's just tremendous associated benefits associated with this. Fits right in with the governor's Oregon plan, I think, very well. You had another question of us, and I think, Wally, you were going to answer that one.
Yes, for the record, my name is Wally Rellis. I'm Director of Forestry Assistance with the Department of Forestry. I think Representative Hess asked a question about what would the increase in number of acres be under the different percentages. Well, we went back and got out our crystal ball, and based upon some of our past experiences with cost-share programs that no longer exist and how landowners react, and we came up with this chart that you have. If you look at number two, you have a two-sided charts. Number two is the estimated acres at the different percentage levels. And as you can see, at the 30%, we just assumed that the program would be continued about where it is. At the 50%, we started getting some increase during the next biennial, and then it goes up and levels off somewhat again. And the same is true of the different percentages. You just go to a higher level. And at 100%, we assumed that somewhere out there in the future, in about 5 years, we get to around 55,000 acres, and that may level off. There are a lot of variables involved in this thing, and of course, market conditions is one of those things that's a variable. Market conditions might have less of an impact on it as you go into the higher percentage rates. But this is what our crystal ball says at this point in time.
So the left side of that grid is acreage?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, okay. Right. And then if you look at the other side, we attempted to put in the tax credit dollars, and it follows the same pattern, but it does show us that probably sometime in the next 2 to 3 years we might need to take a look at that cap if, in fact, we increase, particularly above the 50%. If we stay at the 50%, it's questionable as to how far out we would reach that cap, but we might need to take a look at it again in at least 2 to 3 years.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Representative Hess.
Thank you, and thanks to you guys. For this chart is excellent, and it was really exactly what I was looking for and hoping that we would have in our hands if we carry this bill on the floor and someone asks, well, on what basis are you raising this from 30 to 50%? You know, unfortunately, it also shows that there's even more benefit going up to 100%. So, that it really just, for us, I guess there's just this question of where do you draw the line, not on, you know, all of these credit programs are worthwhile, not just this, but the renter assistance and the elderly program that we saw the other day. I mean, you could probably find similar charts on many of those tax credits. But anyway, thank you for this. And
you're welcome.
Okay, we are in work session. We have two amendments before us.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I move the -1. Can I move them both at the same time, Mr.
Chairman? Oh, let's take them one at a time.
I don't think you can. I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2161.
Representative Witt moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2161. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
I have a question.
Representative Kefouri. I'm sorry.
Okay. Both females. Down at the beginning of the room. there are two revenue impact statements in my file. One dated the 22nd, one dated today. One assumes 5,000, the other 5,900, and I'm trying to figure out the. And you might have explained it, but it passed me by. So can you?
The data that we're using actually. Was found essentially to be arrayed incorrectly, let's say, and we had to go through the process of straightening out the matching up for a given year, not only the preliminary credit, but the returns that have final approval that the forest is free to grow. The way the credit works is that half of the credit amount is available to the person whose claim is a tax credit in the year that the reforestation project is certified by the Department of Forestry. Then when that stand is free to grow, there's a final certification that it is free to grow. The other half of that initial credit is available, plus 30% of any qualified management expenses that they've incurred in that interim between the two certifications. So what you need to do is to match up those different numbers, not 30% of what's certified receives the pre-certification in a year plus 30% of the management cost, but 15% under the 30% credit, or let's just say half of the costs are eligible in 1990, say. You're looking at the amount of the credit. Well, half of the credit that's certified for that year, preliminary certification is available for credit. And then on the final certificate, half of what was pre-certified probably 2 or 3 years earlier becomes available for credit, plus 30% of the management cost. Well, there were some mismatches in the records. And so what's happened during the interim is we got that straightened out in a consistent set of data, and so it changed the estimate somewhat.
One follow-up question. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that the three that I have for 2161, that's the same general scenario for the regular, for the bill, because there are three sets of revenue estimates.
Yeah, the one you want
I
is the one dated 28.
The -1s and all three have different numbers on them.
Right,
so today's date is the accurate one.
Yes.
And then my last question then would be, so the 499,100 revenue impact. Actually, it's not my last question. It's my second to last question. For 2001, 2003, encompasses the 299,500.
It does.
Okay, so that's the total
the
revenue.
Differential.
The amended bill.
Is.
All right. Okay. And then is any of this anticipated in the governor's budget?
I don't know what he did with respect to this continuation of the program.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it is anticipated that this program would continue at the 30%
level.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
So the differential there.
So the difference between 299.5 and 499.1 would be the revenue impact that we're adding, tacking on to the government.
Let me suggest on that, it's a procedural issue, I suppose, as much as anything else. My preference would be if we think the 50% is good policy, that we move that forward today. And over to the Senate, a number of these bills, some will be coming from the Senate to here, that have revenue impacts that may not be anticipated in the budget. Our strategy is to either get the bills over from here to the Senate or from the Senate over to here and hold some of those until we get into the balancing at the end of the session. And we may need in the Senate to go back to 30% if it turns out at the end of the session there's just not enough available to do that. That would be done at the Senate. And again, we may be in a position of having to make those kind of changes on bills that have come over from there. My preference, though, today would be to act on what we think the best policy is on this, move the bill forward, and then take care of the balancing as we get into the session. Representative Whitman.
Yeah, and also, Mr. Chairman, I think by going to 50% here and extending the sunset out 10 years, what we're doing is we're providing through these policies as these lands get reforested, not only better private economic activity, but more revenues coming in from these lands over time and into the state.
Representative Bates.
I lost two notes that I wanted to get back into my notes. How many acres were involved? You actually had surveyed the state, knew how many acres it were, and what the cap was, the annual cap was right now.
Chair Shadley and Representative Bates, the number of acres that are potential is 1.5 million. And the cap is just a little over a million, about 1,040,000, I believe. That's the tax credit cap.
Yes. Biannual or
that's an annual.
That's an annual.
I guess, Mr. Chair, if I can interrupt there, the cap really, as you read the law, does not have anything to do with the credit, at least directly. It has to do with project costs that are certified in a year. And the calculations that Forestry has done there show a cap of $3,468,000 as to project costs that they can certify. So if you're increasing the credit from 30 to 50%, then the credit is going to jump up, you know, because the limit is on project costs that can be certified.
That's correct. Thank you, Dick.
Okay. We have the motion to move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2161. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Whit.
Move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2161.
Representative Whit moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2161. Those are the amendments that add the 10-year sunset. Is there any discussion on those amendments? Any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2161 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Whit moves House Bill 2161 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Half.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Whit.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Satori.
Aye.
Chair
Shatterly. Aye. House Bill 2161 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Brown, you've got some trees in your district, don't you?
Yeah, we're more than a little backwoodsy there.
Okay, we'll ask you to carry the bill.
It'll be my pleasure. Thanks.
Since we got our other forest land guy carrying the other bill. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just one comment to the department a little bit. And this is not meant to be critical or anything, but it would have been helpful to had a visitation from the department about all these bills, and I never was contacted to, you know, we've sorted through it and it's fine, and it just would, for those of us who are new to the committee, and this is more of a lesson for next session, but I don't know other members who have gotten a visitation, but it's kind of nice to get a little warning and get 30 minutes to in the office to talk about these kinds of things. So it's not meant to be critical, just kind of in the future be helpful if you set up a time to come chat about this kind of stuff. Thank you.
Okay, we have one more bill. You may be wondering why the elimination of the sunset on tax exemption for higher education parking facilities fits in with our theme for the day, but that's because we've amended forest cabins into House Bill, Senate Bill 329. So it is part of the theme.
In that forest before
they that's right. Oh, yeah. The Senate Bill 329, we'll open the work session on that and welcome Lisbeth up and bring us up to date on what we have before us today.
Hey, Mr. Chairman and committee members, with Senate Bill 329, you do have a Dash 1 amendment. And what that Dash 1 amendment is just addressing the issue that was brought before you with the the cabins that are recreational facilities that are on federal forest lands. So basically, with this Dash 1 amendment, it's going to extend the sunset date from July 1st, 2002 to 2012 on the property tax exemptions for recreational facilities and summer homes that are located on federal land. So basically, as we had testimony to in the last hearing, there are about 1,600 cabins throughout Oregon on forest land. These are cabins that have special permits. They pay permit fees and things in order to be on the federal lands, and they have to abide by the federal guidelines. And so with this extension of the sunset to 2012, this would reduce the local revenues that would have been coming on the roll in 2002-03 by about $700,000 each year, and that's based on the tax expenditure report of 2001-03.
Okay, I think the Dash 1 amendments do what we asked. It reinstates a sunset on the forest land dwellings, and we still have the elimination of the sunset on the parking.
That's right. Everything parking. Else okay. is remains intact. This is just added on to the end of Section 4.
Okay. We have the Dash 1 amendments before us. Representative Beck?
I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 329.
Representative Beck moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 329. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Beck?
I move Senate Bill 329 as amended to the House floor to pass recommendation.
Representative Beck moves Senate Bill 329 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended, I should note. Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 329 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, Representative Beck, if you want to carry that, that would be just fine. You've got parking structures in your district.
I do.
Okay. Close the work session. I'm sorry, what? Did I say close? I misspoke. Yeah. Representative Carlson, how do you wish to vote?
329.
I'll vote aye.
Okay.
Safe bet.
Safe bet. Okay. With that, then, we will officially close the work session and... I'm sorry, Mr. Barrow's amendments did not make it into the bill.
We're adjourned.